Now on UK Health Radio, treat yourself to an upgrade. Pack away your low self-esteem. Leave behind that empty feeling. Stow your fears and doubts in the overhead locker. And go from stress to authentic success with Danielle Sachs.
Beautiful you, wherever you are in the world. I am so excited to talk to you today on this show, From Stress to Authentic Success. I've had some really productive weeks with positive stress in my life, and not much time to actually share a lot when in my social media. But today I'm quite excited to talk to you, because this show is all about chronic diseases and how we can support the people that suffer from them in our environment, how we can be the caregiver, what these diseases do to us. And I'm especially talking about Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease is a neurodegenerative disorder that affects millions worldwide. And I am talking today to Dr. George Ackerman. And I'm just going to tell you the story of George, but I just want to say to you that Parkinson's disease is one of those progressive disorders of the nervous system. And it mainly affects our movement. I know quite a lot of people in my environment. I'm 62 years old, almost 63. And I can tell you that I have quite a few people in my environment. And it is all about the nerve cells in the brain, specifically those responsible for the producing dopamine that are all damaged or die. Dopamine itself is a neurotransmitter that plays a crucial role in everything that has to do with coordinating your movements. So its deficiency leads to many of the characteristic symptoms of Parkinson. And many of these symptoms can vary from person to person, but commonly we all know the tremors, the stiffness, the slowed movement, they call it bradykinesia, and often an impaired balance and coordination. So some Parkinson's patients may experience also non-motor symptoms such as depression, anxiety, sleep disturbances, and all that really impacts their quality of life. And there's a recent study, and I want to say that in this show, because we don't realize how many times Parkinson's disease is in our environment. Because according to research published in the Journal of Parkinson's Disease itself, an estimated 6.1 million people worldwide are living with Parkinson's. And that was in 2016. And they estimate that by 2040, that's not far away. That's about 15 years away. This number is going to be doubled, surpassing the 12 million individuals globally. Now, I do believe that that means that it is time that we talk about it, because Parkinson's disease gives a lot of stress to the people who suffer from it, but also to the caregivers, the people around those people with chronic diseases. And there are many other things like Alzheimer's, dementia. There's a lot of the neuropathy that my mom suffers from. There's so many diseases out there. And so I am going to talk to George, Dr. George Ackerman, who is Sharon's son. Sharon was a woman who died in when she was 69 years old, and she suffered from Parkinson's for quite a long time. And George lost his mother. That name was Sharon Riff Ackerman. And I think it's on the 1st of January 2020. So that's more now than almost 4 years ago. So George wanted to honor his mother and continue to help in the Parkinson's awareness cause, which is such a beautiful thing to do. It has become his life mission. He did not know how to, do how to help his mother. And that's why he started Together for Sharon as a family for a purpose of keeping his mother, Sharon Reif Ackerman, memorized, to keep her memory alive and to share the messages all around Parkinson, to make that Parkinson disease really, how can I say that, to bring more awareness and even hope for a cure. And so the Together for Sharon website is all over the place and it reaches thousands of individuals. And so I'm going to talk to George Ackerman just now after this little break. And for me, it is a little bit of a vulnerable conversation because, as I say, I have my own mom suffering from very bad neuropathy, who is in a wheelchair, who's totally dependent. And it is not easy as a caregiver to be in that sandwich situation, meaning the sandwich, meaning above us, there's our parents, the older generation, and underneath us, there's the younger generation. And as you know, I'm a grandmother and I'm going to become a grandmother of five soon as well. Big news. So it's all about that. How can we handle the stress of seeing our parents like that and then still taking care of ourselves? Don't forget the self-care and of the rest, the generation to come and even the grandchildren. So I'm going to talk to George Ackerman just now after this little break.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, and I am so delighted to speak to Dr. George Ackerman. Welcome, George.
Thanks for your time and all your listeners. It means the world to me. I'm really just here on one main mission in memory of my mother, who unfortunately passed due to Parkinson's, and I'm really just here to tell others who are either suffering with Parkinson's or family, caretakers, givers, that you're never alone. And I'm trying to really reach individuals who do not have Parkinson's and those who are not caretakers, because unless we have everyone globally throughout the world on this team, it's going to be further from a cure. So thank you again.
So what is your intention in this conversation? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, unfortunately, my mother passed on 1/1/2020. She was my best friend, and I feel that she was really robbed, and so were our family because of this disease. My main intent is just to reach those around the world and really bring more and spark awareness, so that if we have more individuals throughout the world understanding what Parkinson's is, we can gain more knowledge, more funding for a cure, and then be done with this disease forever. I've had the honor to speak to UK Parkinson's, so I've had the ability to reach the globe. So it's not just about my mother and my story. Now I research and interview other individuals throughout the UK, throughout France, Spain, Italy, just to get their journeys out too, because again, no one is ever alone in this fight.
No, I agree. I know a lot of people who suffer from Parkinson's, but let's just start with the beginning. When I say the word Parkinson, what does that do to you?
Well, personally, it puts a sadness in my heart, but
sadness?
also motivates me though to push harder and to speak to more individuals like you and your audience, because again, there are many people who are not aware. It's really nice that you are, which is important. I've done a lot of these and the people look at me with a blank stare, and that's the problem. So until we reach everyone,
but for anyone, you have lived it. You have the story in your heart, in your bones, about what Parkinson can do for you, because I truly understand that when you see whether it's your best friend, your mom, your partner, whoever you see going through this disease, what does it do to you? What does the Parkinson do to you? You don't have it, but you love someone who has it. What does that do to you?
And that's why I like this, or love this conversation. It brings up a main area of stress as a caregiver for anyone who has a loved one who has a disease. You
Yes.
really want to be there to support them. I held my mother's hand through the toughest times that I went through, feeling burnt out, stress. I kind of gave up a lot of my own life with my own
Good.
family. I have three children. I
How many
also
children?
love three. So my mother, my grand, she had three grandkids. I
Wow.
loved her.
So are you
So
the only child?
no, I have a brother, but I was the main caregiver. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to help as much, so
Okay.
I was the main one. So I did go through really tough times in my whole life. It was fitness and exercise, but I had to give a lot of it up because anytime I put even the clothes on to go to the gym, my mother would call either panicking due to dementia, which came later, or some other issue. And my dream and goal was really just to be there to support her.
How was for you both the introduction of Parkinson when the diagnosis comes, or even before that? Because I suppose there are symptoms or things that before you know that you really have Parkinson. How does that go? What were
And
the
my mother had it for 15 years. Oddly enough, I didn't get really involved till the last four when it became almost an emergency.
Okay.
My mother didn't show many signs. She had a stiff arm, so she couldn't cut towards the end, but she didn't interfere with her ability to have friends, to drive, and to live independently. But the fourth year, she went for a special study, and we think they might have changed her medication too drastically. And that's when I had to rush to her house at 4 a.m. and she thought there were people inside the house hurting her. So she was moving her furniture out of the house. And when I got there, talk about stress. I work in law enforcement, but I was, ever planned for this. So I was frantic, not sure what to even do, rushed her to the hospital. And luckily they said we saved her life. But that day going down to the last day, 4 years was really the worst for me,
Is
as
it?
a caregiver. Because I didn't know what to do, what method to take. I really felt alone. I looked for resources, but it was too troubling. And I myself am lucky. My wife was very supportive. She was also my mother. They were very close. But so
Okay.
she was able to care for my family. But I definitely took a big toll on me. I felt in a way, not a term out there, but I felt almost like I had secondary Parkinson's where I didn't
I
have
agree.
the actual diagnosis, but I was definitely literally in the room. My mother also showed signs after time progressed of losing a lot of weight, having
Yes.
a dystonia, which is curling of the toes. And
Yes.
also when the dementia came, the hallucinations and the delusions were something that horrified me.
Yeah, I believe that. So when I say the word Parkinson, you told me there's a lot of sadness. Is there some anger in there, some like hopelessness or no powerlessness, something there?
Every single one of those words, I have to say yes, because when you're sitting there, whether you're a son or anyone, seeing your mother or loved one going through that, it breaks your heart. And then some of us, like me, take it as a mission. I said in my own mind,
Yes.
I'm going to stop, I'm going to end this disease, I'm going to try and make her comfortable. But every day, something else came up and I felt I failed, over and over again until the last day when I lost her. And now today is why I'm here to, because I really get emotional too. I'm 6'2", 200-pound police, but this stuff is not easy to talk about. But that's why I value your time, your audience, and really send my love to everybody
George,
fighting this.
I just want to ask you something because I'm 62, and I, anyone listening, I'm 62. I'm a mother of three, like you are, but I'm also a
Sure.
grandmother of four. Now, I have a mother in a care center. It's not Parkinson, it's not, but she can't use her legs. She's in a wheelchair. She can't go to the toilet on her own. She's dependent. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But what I found the most stressful and the most difficult, and I want to see if that's in your life too, and I think you've been, making a point already, is that we call it in Belgium here the sandwich generation, meaning you are squashed between the parent who needs your help, the kids who need your support, the grandkids who need to, so you are in between generations. And that is a stressful time because you want to still own a little bit of your own life, but you are squashed into the help for the elderly and the support for the younger ones. Do you feel that as well?
Yeah, I definitely feel I was almost like a cookie or sandwich crushed in the middle. But I do think it was kind of unique because I had my wife to support me with my own family. So they understood, and I did still work, but I was able close enough to my mother to keep her in her own home. So I was able to kind of have access. And also, we spent $12,000 a month because we at some point we had to hire, I don't call them caregivers, more like in a way babysitters who would just stay there to make sure my mother didn't fall, because I knew if she fell, that would have been the end of it. So yes, I do agree with a lot of what you said. That's why I
I
love
never understood
applying.
that word until I was in it myself. You know, because when you're 40 years old, you think, well, you know, sandwich generation. But at my age, you understand what the sandwich gen. I love the word because it's actually literally a sandwich kind of, you know, experience. You are like stuck.
Might want to add a sandwich on fire, because some days I felt like the sandwich was going to explode, because my mind literally, I didn't have, like much support either, because I never handled this. I always say you can't take a course on being a caregiver. You might learn it or read about it, but unless you're actually thrown into it, it's not, there's nothing you can explain.
And that's where my message around self-care and, you know, self-respect and self-care. Self-care is not just in a crisis. Self-care is a preventive thing. Like in my life, in my story, I need to take good care of myself if I want to be the supporter of my mom and the supporter of the younger generations. So self-care is a big thing. How did you manage that?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I was approached by one of the nurses and said, what I'm doing is amazing. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, most males, there's not many male caregivers. And I was shocked. So I was speechless because I didn't even think of it. But to deal with a lot of, I was amazed. But I don't know if it's shame for some individuals or maybe busy, but I always swore that, I'm only the man I am today because of my mother's sacrifices.
Course.
So I swore that I would do anything and sacrifice myself at that time. But we weren't, when you have Parkinson's is unique because it affects everybody so differently. If you take somebody like celebrity, who's a big advocate, Michael J. Fox, he has the external tremors. So my mother had more internal. So that's some of the signs also. But it's even more frustrating because she felt that maybe you didn't believe or understand. And also, this
But
was
you couldn't
about,
see it.
this was like 20 years ago around, or 15. So she also, I didn't know if she herself had shame, because a lot of times people don't want to come out and talk about
Yeah,
Parkinson's because they think
I
they'll be
agree.
treated differently by friends or family or work. So it's just, there are still questions today. I wish I could ask her. Unfortunately, I can't. But that's why I love being with you today, because I find that this has been very interesting and different. I always say I might do a lot of these, but it's always the unique ones like this that mean a lot to me. So I appreciate those questions.
Yeah, and you know, you can talk about Parkinson and you can talk about the disease and the signs and the signs and the, but it's the authentic story behind it, the real story. People don't see it, George, what you are doing behind the scenes. So it's
Even
about, I know what I'm, so that's why I also agreed to have this interview because I know what the stress is behind the scenes. To see the woman
also.
who has given you life, to see the woman who has made you exactly like you say into you who you are, suffering like that. Is it also, because that's how I feel, is it also the awareness about the how do you say that? The end of life is coming more to your awareness, how these last months of life can be so it. I find that very, very confronting.
Yeah, me too. And it's almost interesting because, unfortunately, when my mother passed, I was heartbroken, but it sparked me to start a new journey of advocacy and trying to reach individuals. And that's the only reason I do speaking now is I'm still grieving. It's been 4 years, but there's not a day that doesn't go by that I'm still stressed, still wondering what if. And this is like a new journey and a new battle and causes a lot of stress. I'm not going to lie. Even today, I have a lot of things like computer issues I almost had to miss today. And it's just very, it's like, again, it's like the hammer or the nail. I feel, but I feel every time I want to give up or I'm burnt out, or maybe some nights are still sleepless where I'm up the whole night thinking about her. The only thing that keeps me going is individuals like you, your audience, and also people out there suffering. And I have the honor
George, I want to ask you something. What would she say to you today, here and
question.
Now? What would she say to you?
She would say, George, don't waste your time. She's funny. She would say, spend your time with your family, and I don't want you focusing on this. But, you know,
do
everybody
something.
Has to.
Take care of your, you know, be present for your kids. Don't even think about me because I'm there on the other side and I'm fine. Wouldn't she say that?
Oh, yeah. But I still wouldn't agree because I feel there's still a lot of people like you know that are out there that don't have a voice and are not able to fight due to their health. And I find myself being their warrior, and I will never stop advocating until we find a cure. Luckily, last December, ironically, before we spoke, they passed the first bill in the United States history called the National Plan to End Parkinson's Disease. And we're hoping now it's going to the Senate this year, and hopefully the president will sign it into law.
Whoever
but it's
is
help.
President, though.
Yeah, I'm sure they will, because this is a bipartisan, because there's really no reason somebody wouldn't want a cure.
True.
And what we're hoping is that it'll help funding for research, it'll help diagnose early. But we're hoping, too, that other countries like UK, England, France, they'll see this and maybe they can adopt it, too. So we're actually talking today live during a moment of history.
Oh, well done. Great. So what do you think for your mom was the biggest stress around this whole diagnosis, these whole four last years of her life? What was her biggest stress?
I think it really was she kept saying that she hopes she'll be around for her grandkids, like their wedding and their. So every Sunday morning was my favorite time where they would sit in the back and blow bubbles together, and I would just look and be quiet but be happy every day. And now when I walk by the backyard, I don't see them, and it stinks. That's the hardest part about it all. But, you know, I'm reliving it every time I'm telling her story. But some days after I speak, I go to the other room, and I still fall apart. Luckily, my wife's there to pick me back up. But, you know, it's not easy to do this. But, again, I feel like there's a need for it to fight.
But, George, I'm going to be very honest with you. How is your personal grief going? Because your mourning, I hear, you are still fighting, have you been mourning your mom?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say yes, but through this is what gives me hope for others. But I still definitely, there's not a day again that doesn't make me sad, stressed, and upset that the disease took her, because I feel like we were robbed. You know, she was 69 is young in this world. I feel like you should at least be around till 85, 90, or, you know, reasonable. So, but anyway, I feel that, you
when
know,
you
she
are
could
in
have
my
had,
job, you know that that is not true. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the nice thing is everybody, again, has different experiences, and it's more like a general view. Obviously, I don't know many people that are that age, but in my hope, or at least my belief from being brought up, I think you should be able to, and at least even if you do pass younger, your last year should be relaxing or going on vacation or not suffering, you know,
in
a
bed.
That's
not reality, George. I'm going to tell
right.
you, I'm a physiotherapist. I've seen in a medical field, I've seen so many things. That is not reality. And maybe luckily, because imagine a world where everybody would be, you know, till they're, we learn from our challenges. We learn from our diseases. We learn from our crises. What is your biggest lesson that you have learned from seeing your mom, from Parkinson, from what is your lesson? What is your intake from that? What did you take from that?
The best news is that the research and different information out there is getting better. So whether social media or the ability for someone like us to sit at home and now find out togetherforsharon.com or look around, see that we have 600 interviews too of other people who are going through exactly what they are.
Same.
But my biggest message is really that I feel confident there can be a cure, but unless we have more people fighting for it, it won't come very soon.
Wow. I have a client whose partner has quite severe Parkinson. And last week she was telling me that they went together to the hospital and they were sitting in the waiting room. And she was shocked by what she saw. How many people, like, I'm not saying like cows in a room, but, you know, there's the humanness. It's like a number game. And, okay. And I don't know in the States, and I know that our healthcare is much better than in the States and we are supported. But even with that kind of healthcare, there are so many people suffering, and they are, I don't even know if the medical field knows what to do, to be honest.
I agree. It's similar here in the U.S. I actually feared bringing her to the hospital because they really, either they weren't prepared or trained, or they just didn't have time. So there, I think every time she went, because she did go a few times, it got worse. So I know the first time she was sent to a rehab center for a week after, and that was when it just was never the same. So when we got home, our health just declined. She went from the cane to the walker, from the walker to a wheelchair, from the wheelchair to bed bound. And I think, again, I agree 100% that they need to definitely focus more on awareness too in the hospital system in U.S. and possibly your country.
Yeah, and the humanness, you know.
Yeah.
They are compassion. Humans in the last phase of their life. And they deserve, I look at my mom, it's the same. She doesn't have one of those diseases, but she has a polyneuropathy, which is, you know, the nerves in your legs starting to decline and all that. And so she's also in a wheelchair. And people, you know, yeah, it's such a difficult subject.
The word might be, we need more compassion. That's the word, compassion.
Yeah, I agree. No, that's, I agree. So, let's talk about your children. How did they see? What was their biggest stress or biggest thing when they saw their grandmother?
I have one specific example. Is my mother was once on a Sunday in her bed. My daughter, Brooke, at the time, she was about 7 years old. And I were there. And my mother started hugging in the pillow and saying how much she loved Brooke. But unfortunately, it was the dementia speaking. So my daughter looked at me and said, she didn't say anything. She just looked and kind of smiled awkwardly, like she didn't know what to say. And I look back as an adult, had no clue what to say. So it was very, again, tough to deal in those moments and situations. And those are the ones that really stand out. And I'm thinking in the future, possibly writing a book about how to tell the kids, because I struggled. The youngest one was too young. So that's another sad thing, because I hope he remembers her, because if they're so young, about 2, 3 years old, they might not even have any memory. And then my middle son, he remembers her, but he remembers playing with her with puzzles and games. But I don't know if he really also appreciates a lot of what was going on, you know.
And we don't know what's going on in their head, you see. Right. They're trying often to put a brave face because they want to protect you and they see you suffer. Yeah. So they want to be the good girl and the good boy so that dad is not suffering even more, which is, I've lived that myself when I was a young girl. You know, my little brother died, and
the
trauma in the house, that as a child you think, I'm always gonna be the good girl. I'm not gonna be, you know, a burden. I'm gonna be brave, and so that's why I'm asking, that next generation is also sometimes forgotten on how they see and live the disease, because it's their grandmother.
Right. Yeah, and one of my mother's favorite moments in her life was when she found out we were having a girl. Because she always wanted a girl to buy her dolls and dress up. So thankfully she did have that. So they loved each other. And even today we talk a lot, my daughter and I, about her. Now she's 11. So, you know, they see what I do for Sharon and all the awareness and meetings. But I hope that, I always joke and tell her maybe she'll take over one day. But I'm hoping in my heart, too, that we don't need her to, that we'll find a cure. Yes. We can end this disease, and that's the end of it.
Can I ask you, since your mother passed away, I find that always a very interesting subject, and certainly for highly sensitive people that I work with the most. Do you still feel the connection with your mom? How do you, because she passed, and how do you talk to her? Do you have certain rituals with her? Is there, how is the connection with your mom?
It was unfortunately her graveyard is not far from my house, so we were able to visit once in a while, talk. But I hope she's looking down by all the work I do now and proud of me. I'm also publishing a book soon. It'll be on her journey and mine, and I want her story to continue on forever. So the real goal is to remember my mother. And if we even reach one person out there that now will understand and learn who she was and who she is, and that Parkinson's disease never defines the person, and you have to remember the good times. So that's the most important message. But I don't talk a lot, but I do miss her. There are days after I come out of these where I've just poured my heart out to talk. I go into the room and it takes some time to get back to it. But, again, I'm grateful for anyone who has a moment to hear our story.
I do want to ask you, and I'm a person, that always looks for the positive side, the bright side, the lessons. What can I take from this? What is your positive side that you got out of this Parkinson experience?
Yeah, last year I realized it wasn't about just my mother and I anymore. It was about everybody in this fight. So I was able to interview about 600 people more through email, and I share their journeys on our website completely free. We don't accept money. We're not here for that. But living through those people and knowing they're also going through what my mother did is what drives me to keep going. Every day you wake up and I open up the internet to Together for Sharon. If you click interviews, it has a new story. And those people, are really what drives me to keep going. And I actually had someone email me recently and said, I spent 10 hours on your website and I want to I told them, don't spend that much time. But they said they really appreciate it because they felt alone.
Of
and
course.
seeing all the stories means that, and this is not just the US, these are individuals again around the world.
Beautiful. And so now you're on the UK Health Radio, platform, and the show will be there for quite a while also on the website. So people can go and re-listen, which is quite important, and listen on demand and download it and do all sorts of things with it. But I still feel, and I just want to say that I still feel you are in a fighting modus.
Yep, I'm never going to give up till there's a cure, but I do want to let everyone know that I don't feel this is just about a little talk between us. I feel we become family. Same thing with all those individuals listening. This is not something where we just kind of say hi, goodbye. No, we're going to share this. I'm going to share it. We need everyone else to share it because, again, my goal is to find a cure. And the only way I find, if you find enough people who can stand up, that we're so much stronger together. And I have one message I always say, that we love you. We support you. We care a lot about you, and you're never alone. I'll advocate for you, and together, again, our voices are so much stronger. And I always joke around and say I'm just getting started, but I do feel, to relieve my stress, every morning I wake up, it's really a new fight, and I am going to keep fighting until we have a cure.
Okay. My question is do you need to fight for that? Wouldn't it be for you less stress if you would stop fighting and just sharing?
Yeah, I like what you're saying, but
such a fight in your voice, in your whole human being, and in one side, double one for me. I can appreciate it, and I honor you for that. But for your own health and for your own well-being and your family, wouldn't it be an idea to not just fight, but share and expand from an energy of, instead of an energy of fighting?
Yeah, there will be a point where I have to decline some things. Like you said, I'm taking on a lot, but I also have my own career. I'm in law enforcement reserve. I'm also an attorney, and I have a PhD in criminal justice.
Wow.
But again, I put this more as a priority. And again, until
you
maybe
still
one
work
day,
in your normal job?
Yeah. That's why it's
Are
nice.
Are you still enjoying that?
Oh, I love it. I like,
oh,
before
good.
This world, before the world of caregiving, I advocated for family members of homicide victims, so crime.
Wow.
My whole life has been dedicated to helping victims of crime. That's a different podcast.
Oh, that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
Oh, now I can see the connection.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
why
I
I'm
actually,
fighting.
I kind of correlate, sadly, a
yes.
lot of people in the U.S. With Parkinson, their caretakers as victims of society, also of the healthcare system, because, like I said, before we started talking, the U.S. has never even really recognized Parkinson's at all in the law. This is the first time in history. So all those people also are fighting. But when I say fighting, it's a good positive fight. We're not physically fighting, but you know, it could change the word. But yeah, I do definitely sacrifice my own health some days and stress. But
and I don't like that, George.
Yeah.
Please don't do that. We need you. Yeah. Don't sacrifice yourself.
That's why I'm so lucky that, you know, we met, became friends, and that I'll always value our time together and keep, I'll also re-listen to this.
It's so important because it's like the oxygen mask in the plane. If your mother would sit next to you in the plane and the plane would, you know, you would need an oxygen mask, you need to put it on yourself first. Hey, George?
Right. No, I agree. And again, that's why I also learn every day from everyone I meet. So a lot of what you taught me today, I value, and I'll definitely take it into consideration.
I just want you
it.
To keep on going and not, I mean, I see so many people, you know, in fighting modes and trying to survive instead of going into that flow of, you know, that I just find it so intriguing. So what I want to ask you as a last question, because time flies, is, what for you is a statement that you live by, a quote, something that you want to share with anyone listening around, whether it's disease or Parkinson, dementia, whatever it's like, those end stages of life? Is there for yourself like a statement or a quote that you live by?
Yeah, no one is ever alone. Don't give up. And
beautiful.
always keep looking, because the problem is you might not be aware there are individuals like you and me out there trying to share. But also the other one is, very, no matter what you had, your arguments in life with your loved one, forget it, because this is the time you have to remember. You don't want to
life
ever
is short,
regret. And I think the last thing is really the word regret. You never want to regret. I can look back, if I had to do it again, I won't regret a thing. Unfortunately, I wish we had a cure, but that's not something in my control. So that's the main two
well
messages.
Done.
Never, never regret. And also
no regrets.
Support Danielle, because she's an incredible person, and all your listeners. I really am grateful for your time.
It's not about me, but thank you for this conversation. I think those last two things that you said, you're never alone and no regrets. I think that's such an important message. So let's end with that. Thank you so much, George. I'm going to light my candle tonight for your mom next to my dad's. And, I wish everybody, you listener out there, I trust that you had something very, you know, deeply here that you can relate to. And let's say, George, that let's do this together and let's continue this, okay? Thank you
yes,
so
and
much
again,
for being on
thank
the show.
You.
Hey?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Whoa, I found that quite a vulnerable interview, and not just vulnerable, but by the end of the interview, and I trust that you could hear well, because I couldn't always understand George. I don't know if it was the sound or his voice. But I trust that you have grasped most of this interview, and I'm going to repeat a few things, because, as I said, whoa, because you can hear that Dr. George Ackerman is actually sacrificing his own life to do this. He has made it his mission to bring that awareness around Parkinson's disease. And to me, it's such a beautiful mission to do. But my message is all about doing what you love doing with mission and passion and purpose, but without sacrificing yourself. And I can really understand what he's saying around being the, you know, the caregiver, what it does to you, the stress that it brings. I'm so grateful that we are three girls, my two sisters and I, to take care of my mom. I'm not sure that I could handle that on my own. If you can divide this task, and it's not a task, it's something very logical to do,
after what our parents did for us. But still, we are in that, as I said, in that sandwich generation, taking care of our parents and also taking care of the next generations. I mean, with four grandchildren and the fifth on the way, I promise you that I have a big family of 12 people separate from my mom. That's not even counting in her care. So, and myself, the care for myself. So as you could hear, I was actually stressing and trying to convince Dr. George to take more care of himself, because it felt as if he said it himself, as he had secondary Parkinson. It is very troubling. You need self-care and self-love, and you need time off and take a distance when you are the caregiver in situations like that. So I trust that if you listening here and now, and you are in such a situation, you recognize yourself in the situation of Dr. George, trying to take care of parents, trying to raise awareness around these diseases, these chronic diseases that are all over the place, then I want you to know that your self-care is a priority and not just a necessity in a crisis. It's you need to do it in a preventive modus. So please try to see this whole thing also, he called it fighting. And I don't know what the word could be in a more positive way, like servicing, maybe, you know, doing everything we can to service those who suffer around us, to service those who struggle with a chronic disease. I think it's all about service, but not about sacrifice. And so, because if we sacrifice our own well-being, we can't help the other people in the same way. So I was also touched by how you were talking about what is true healthcare in society anyway? Is it a number game? Look at the hospitals. They are like, I don't know, it's a health organization. But sometimes, as I said, my client who went to the hospital and who felt like being in a factory. So it is so important. And that's what I do with my clients, to still give people personal attention, to make them a VIP person, to treat them as they are worthy of the best care and not just as a number. So I find that also very important. And indeed, what George is trying to do, it's not just about you and me. It's not just about my mother or his mother. It's about everybody. It's about the whole system, the whole world, to make the world a better place. I think Dr. George is doing a beautiful thing, but I do believe we need to make this a more human experience, human care. And we can only do that if we're going to take care of ourselves too. So to be compassionate for ourselves and compassionate and kind for others and of service. As I said, once again, service, not sacrifice. And I'm going to end with the fact that George was mentioning that whoever is in this situation, if that is you in a chronic disease situation, you're not alone. Ask for help. It's not a weakness to ask for help. It's your birthright. So go and ask for help, and please live your life day by day as if it's your last one. No regrets, because life is too short. And so I have been realizing this more and more now that I see around me so many people, even in my practice, you hear so many cancers, so many Alzheimer's, so many Parkinson's, so many chronic illnesses that really make us realize that life is short and that we need to make the best out of every single day. That's why I did that show of last week, I think, around how to transform your life one day at a time. If you haven't listened to it, please go back to it, because it's all about conscious self-care on a daily basis. Again, it is your birthright. I so appreciate you. I so value you. I want you to know that you are worthy of being your best self, worthy of good help around you, that you are worthy of love. I'm going to leave you with that, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.
From Stress to Authentic Success was presented by Danielle Sachs. Join Danielle at the same time next week here on UK Health Radio. And meanwhile, for more on how to thrive in business and everyday life by being true to yourself, go to daniellesachs.com.